if enough people notice those behaviors in you that are all about you, selfish, self-promoting, etc. I mean, most of the time when a comment like that is posted, nobody replies or gives any acknowledgement to that kind of comment. And you can just hear in that wall of silence all the people who are mentally walking away from this person, just like you described.
Coffee's for closers only.
So we've established my proposal is sound in principle. Now we're just haggling over price.
Let's see how much we're going for on eBay.
Man, it's the same as Dunkin' Donuts. Cost 15 times the price.
Welcome to Impact Pricing, the podcast where we discuss pricing, value, and the friendly relationship between them. I'm Mark Stiving, and today our guest is Robert Ribchuk, and here are three things you want to know about Robert before we start. He has a BA in math and economics from Harvard. I love saying Harvard that way. An MBA from Chicago Booth. I assume that was very quantitative. And for the last 10 years, he's been managing partner of EBITDA Catalyst. Welcome, Robert.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Pleasure to see you again. And you brought back recollections of my first appearance where I think Harvard came up before. So thanks.
I don't have many people. I don't have many people from Harvard on the podcast. I don't know why.
Hey, man. Yeah. I'm not going to second guess you.
So you are here for a second time, and so I'm not going to bother asking the question, how did you get into pricing, which is one of my favorite questions, but we can go back and listen to it from a previous podcast. But before we hit record, you and I were talking just about the pricing community and what goes on in the community, and in particular, what goes on in social media. And let's talk about LinkedIn, because it's the only social media site that I use. I don't know about you, but with 10 years as a managing partner in a consulting firm, I'm guessing that you use LinkedIn to, you know, build a brand, generate business, just like I do, right? And before we started, you paid me this huge compliment, and my ego got so amazingly big that I said, "Oh, you got to say this on the podcast." So, so let's pretend like you haven't given it to me before, and go ahead, give it to me.
Well, anybody listening, don't believe everything you're saying. I don't think Mark's ego ever gets that big. And that's one of the wonderful things about knowing you, having you as a mentor and a friend. And, you know, really, I think what our pre-hit record conversation was about was, you know, you just watch and witness a lot of behaviors, a lot of different people, some of whom you have met, some of whom you have never met, and dialogues or interventions happen out in social media for everyone to see. And, you know, it took me back to a conversation some years ago with someone who had been in pricing for a while, was kind of on his way out. And he was kind of saying, "Hey, I really like pricing, but I really don't like some of the people in pricing." And at the time, I was kind of like new, and I was like wide-eyed and loving everyone and reaching out. And so it was like, "Oh my gosh, what do you mean?" And so, but over time, I've accumulated some of my own examples. And, you know, where you came in is just, this is such a refreshing contrast. You know, so for example, you and I both are critical minds. We sometimes see something online that we agree with, sometimes we seriously disagree, and sometimes we find it perhaps even distasteful. And, you know, there was one situation where you saw something in one of my posts, you thought it was a mistake, and you did what I would have done, which is you sent me a kind direct message, and you were like, "Hey, I think you got this wrong, and I think it's this way." And that's how two professional, you know, colleagues, peers, mentor, mentee, whatever you want to characterize the relationship, ideally should interact when, you know, it's sort of praise in public, criticize in private, or, you know, corrective feedback in private. And that refreshed for me how privileged I am to know some of the good people in pricing. And you have been one of the good people. You have been just a mentor and a friend. And I wanted to thank you for that. And then, you know, we were kind of joking about the contrast with some other behaviors that you see where, you know, there's some people feel such a pressure to self-promote.
Wait, Robert, before you go to the next step, I just want to point out, I was right. Okay. Now go ahead.
Absolutely. And that gave me the opportunity to say you are absolutely right, which was quick and painless. And, you know, we all sometimes, you know, in between feeding children and thinking about five different posts and, you know, can get something wrong, and gave me the opportunity to correct it on the public domain and so forth. So that's wonderful. And that's how honest intellectual conversation should occur, even when it's in the public domain. But yeah, we have other cases where, you know, people are in such a hurry to self-promote that they even see someone else's mistake or someone else's post that they did nothing to create or do the work for as an opportunity to basically free ride or aggrandize themselves. And so whether it's a guy who like leaves comments like, well, I wrote the book on this topic, contributing absolutely nothing to the post that you just spent hours or whatever to create, or, you know, whether it's a guy who takes something he disagrees with, and instead of coming to you, he's never met you, he's never talked to you, instead of coming to you and be like, hey, what did you mean? I'm thinking this might be wrong, but I want to understand the context. You know, they go and put a post on their own website where they take apart what they think you mean, and they're wrong, by the way, they misunderstood in the first place. And so, you know, we unfortunately have some behaviors like that. I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic because the pricing community had an opportunity to grow enormously in visibility, arguably in its own perception of its importance over the last couple of years we've had that have been very pricing heavy years with opportunity and so forth. I think that also created a lot of people who came into the community, put the shingle out, and may feel a lot of pressure to find their opportunity and grow and find clients. And so sometimes pressure brings these behaviors that you and I maybe chuckle at and promise ourselves we're not going to be like that.
Yeah. So there's so many directions I want to take this conversation. But, okay. But the first thing I would toss out is I love to make fun of myself, but I will tell you in all honesty, right? Total truthfulness. I used to be a complete asshole, right? And I would have been one of those people self-aggrandizing, or I would have been one of those people criticizing you in public because, man, let me tell you how smart I really am, right? And I could just, I understand it completely, what's going on. And part of the issue, I believe, is that we as pricing people, we get into pricing because it's numbers, it's math, right? We can be logical about it. And we happen to be the people who aren't socially at the top of the line. Let's put it that way. At least for me, I've worked really hard my entire life to try to be socially acceptable in certain places. So I get it completely.
I mean, boy, like, you know, that's both really thoughtful and self-aware. And I would say the same thing. I think as we come in as younger people with our credentials, accomplishments, but also having internalized other people's expectations, other people's like hopes and dreams about who we should be, perhaps too much, right? We come in with that pressure, right? And a lot of times it translates into this sort of competitive, like if the focus is not on me, if the attention and the preeminent argument is not about me, then that's, I'm not succeeding and I'm letting people down. I'm not on my path. And I think for those of us who either have events in our life that, you know, sometimes you need to like fall with a thud and really hurt yourself to get the message that you are maybe on the wrong path or you're trying to climb too fast, too recklessly or whatever. Other times it's over time, self-awareness, the beauty of friendships and mentorships where someone is in a position to tap you on the shoulder and say like, whoa, dude, like that's a bit too much too fast. And, you know, I think what you're describing, I would put myself in the same place, you know, as a young person, back to your joke about Harvard and, you know, all these, you know, being the person from your country who makes it in on a full scholarship and being put on national TV and all those types of things, right? Things can go to your head, but I think just as importantly, how we were raised, things in our childhood, things in our own mental health can add up and create those types of pressures where all of a sudden that focus on self and going somewhere fast is at the detriment of other people. You know, this brings me to when, you know, we had all this exchange about self-promotion and so forth. At some point, as I was trying to think about, like, what's the gracious way to deal with people who constantly seem to self-promote, for example, in comments on my own posts, or, you know, catch a free ride every time or whatever. And so, like, I was like, I'm humble enough. Let me look for smart people's advice. I Googled something and I came up with this HBR article, right? That is from an HBS professor. It's called Savvy Self-Promotion, right? And it ends with this really interesting paragraph that goes to what you described, what I described about both of ourselves, younger selves, and maybe still applies to some of these people who do similar things out there. And it's, you know, it goes like this. It says, one last and crucial point. If you find yourself constantly fighting the urge to brag, ask yourself why you feel the need. Everybody loves praise, but are you overly dependent on it? Not intrinsically motivated enough? Feeling undervalued in your profession? If so, why? The answers to these questions may prompt deeper self-reflection, which could bring you far more personal benefit than self-promotion ever will. And I think both what you shared about your early life and the work you've had to do, and I went through a similar path. I think I was a much less connected human and self-aware human 20 years ago. And, you know, when you start understanding the why and what's driving you, you're also starting to become aware of the effects that might have on other people. And I think that's Robert, yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna start to shift this in a slightly different direction, if that's okay. And by the way, let me tell you, I had two major, major falls in my life, right? And I can tell you that they changed the way I thought, they changed the way I behaved. I mean, and so I often think it takes these catastrophic events before we say, okay, now I need to do something different. I need to be someone different. And maybe someday I'll tell those stories, or maybe I've already told them here at some point in time. But after one of my last fall, which was 2008, I would say, one of the things that I did was I joined Toastmasters, I joined National Speakers Association, and two things I want to share is that when I saw Darren LaCroix and Craig Valentine get up and give these talks and teach us Toastmasters how to be better speakers, and it was an hour of some of the most amazing content you've ever seen in your life. And I sat back and I asked, so why would they do this? Right? Why would they give this away for free? It's incredible. And the idea is that the more they give away, the more people need more of what they know. Right? And so there's they know weeks worth of content and they just gave me an hour. So what? And I took that to say, how can I give away as much as I possibly can? And so that's why I blog every week. I do these podcasts constantly. And it's just because I want to give to as many people as I can. It's fun. It's easy. And once you start doing it, it feels great, right? Yep. It really does. So that was the first point I wanted to make. And then the second point I want to make, which I'm a member of the National Speakers Association, and NSA was founded around the principle of we don't compete with each other. We want to grow the pie. And so how can we as speakers all grow the pie? And I personally take that attitude into my pricing world, right? How can we personally grow the pie? Because there's no way I could serve every client. I don't even want to do what most people want me to do.
Send those my way, okay?
Right. I will, no problem. But so I just think it's really about how do we help each other and how do we help the industry and how do we grow the pie?
Correct. Yep.
So.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, absolutely. I think different people find different ways. Of the subset of people that adopt that mentality, right? Which is not everyone, right? And, you know, I think whether it takes the public speaking, which you've also shared with me earlier in our relationship, and I know it's somewhere where I could grow and get much better. I don't think I'm a particularly great public speaker as I stand here today. Lots of room to improve. But I think that you know, just this morning, you know, for me, there are other paths like teaching. You know, I was on the phone with the major business school here in Minnesota about the teaching role that I could, you know, do as a part-time. We have our workshops that, you know, sometimes they don't even necessarily have to be like, I think you are very strategic in that there's that point about the giving that comes around, right? Because it's weaved into what you do and people want more of it, right? And that's absolutely savvy and smart to do as part of your business development. And, you know, for me, I even take it a step further where there are certain things where I have no expectation that something will necessarily come back and, you know, this person wants more of me or something like that. And we call that mission-driven pricing. We touched on it a little bit in our previous conversation. And so whether it's like teaching, speaking, and so forth, you know, I think in a more loose way that these things have a way of coming back, most importantly in what you described, which is feeling great, right? And finding that center where there's a balance and you're a giver more than you're a taker in this world. You know, some investment banker that, you know, I knew early in my career used to say there are cookie makers and cookie takers. You know, which one will you be? So, you know, if we spend enough time doing those kinds of things, at the end of the day, you know, back to the people with the urge to self-promote and an urge to get somewhere fast and all those types of things, you know, if you remove this kind of artificial constraint we place on ourselves, like, I got to grow this fast, or I got to be on this trajectory, or I got to reach this amount of money, or whatever, and you just let that balancing act, you know, rest on what makes you feel most whole and contributing to the world, maybe that's a recipe for avoiding the next thud in your life when that trajectory, for reasons you don't control, and none of us control all of the stuff around us, maybe doesn't go according to plan.
I would even argue that when you do too much self-promotion, you slow down your progress. Correct. It doesn't help. I practically live on LinkedIn. I'm on there a lot, every single day. And by the way, I'll share some LinkedIn tips if you guys want to hear them here in just a few minutes.
I want to hear them.
Okay. But I can tell when I read comments on someone else's post that there was someone commenting and was a total dick about it. And it registers in my mind. It's like, okay, this person is not a nice person. Right. And so I've now registered that. And I know the people I like hanging out with and the people I don't like hanging out with. One of my many philosophies in life is I don't judge anybody. You get to do whatever you want to do. I just get to decide if I want to hang out with you or not. Right.
And like you just nail it, right? Like back to that paragraph from the HBS professor, you know, feeling undervalued in your profession? If so, why? And I think you just described it. Like if enough people notice those behaviors in you that are all about you, selfish, you know, self-promoting, etc. I mean, most of the time when a comment like that is posted, nobody replies or gives any acknowledgement to that kind of comment. And you can just hear in that wall of silence all the people who are mentally walking away from this person, just like you described, right?
Yep. I had one guy, this was a while ago, would post on most of my posts, and it was like an advertisement for his company. Now he was a sales VP or sales director or something like that. And I never, ever responded. And eventually I just send him a DM saying, you realize you're making your own company look bad when you do this.
Right.
And he stopped.
I have some thoughts on that. You know, so first of all, I learned that as a LinkedIn, the owner of your own post, you have the ability to remove people's comments, right? And when I found this HBS article, I was in this mindset, like, what's the right thing for me to do? Not for me, that this person is annoying, but for the rest of my readers who are going to spend a few of their moments in a negative experience and so on and so forth. Like, do I just remove him? Do I completely ignore and fail to acknowledge and so forth? And I think, you know, like if the person is, I don't know, some person in a Southeastern Asian country with very limited opportunities and posting about his SEO service or something like that, you know, like at least that's a position where like your mind tries to make some accommodations, like maybe the scarcity of opportunity, this person is a place of hunger where like judgment is, doesn't have the feedback, doesn't know. And so like, you know, you close your eyes and say, okay, whatever. But when it's from someone who you don't expect to have any of those problems and should know better, I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, it's at some point the real service, you went one more than I would have. You know, ignoring and getting no feedback probably sends some message to that person. But at some point, somebody might actually help them by just letting them know, look, I don't think you're helping anyone appreciate who you are with this kind of comment.
So the sad thing is, when I was in Toastmasters, and I was in Toastmasters for 10 years or something, and one of the things we do in Toastmasters meetings is we give feedback to a speech.
Well, you convinced me to go, so now I know.
Are you in? Are you in a Toastmasters group?
Yeah, I'm in. So I can say more about it. But yes, the feedback is a huge part, and it's wonderful.
And I became so good at giving feedback. And it was always, how do I help this speaker get better? It's never, how do I look smart when I do my evaluation? And when you get that mindset, then when I see somebody that I think I can help, even when they don't ask me for help, sometimes I give feedback and I probably shouldn't.
But I think that you're hitting on something interesting there, which is that behavior is actually so rare. Right? When someone takes that interest in making other people better, to kind of go out of their way and take that risk, right? To give that feedback, it's because as a society, we are just so passive aggressive and we just don't say and, you know, would rather avoid the risk of conflict or whatever. And so this person, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy because it's so rare. They might misinterpret it, right? So that risk of like, why you of all people tell me this, rather than, wow, like, here's the one person in a million that's actually communicating with me about this, right? And I happened to read one of the too many books that I read lately, a completely, you know, unrelated topic, but it's called Unreasonable Hospitality. And it's written by this world famous chef who ran I think it's 11 Madison Park in New York. It was the number one restaurant in the world. Sorry, he's not a chef. He's like the business owner, the business manager. And he talks about like giving feedback and criticism and praise. And I actually listened to that segment in the audiobook. I had my family, my daughter and my wife, because I thought it was instructive for us. And he was kind of saying that, you know, giving praise is this and that, but giving criticism is actually an investment because this person is taking a risk, right? It's taking the risk of being misunderstood, rejected, pushed back. And so I wish we would be in a position in our community where more of us would reach out and say, hey, you sounded like a self-promoting, pompous, whatever. And, you know, the only reason I'm reaching out is I care about you. And if you care to have a relationship, I'm interested in that, right? So.
Yeah, I think that's great. So I have way too many life philosophies, but I'm going to share one since you just brought up this concept of feedback again. I guess I brought it up, but you piled on. There's a really good way to give feedback. If I tell you what you did wrong, that sounds really negative and critical. If I tell you what you could do better next time, that sounds really positive and helpful. So just everybody, if you're going to give feedback, think about putting it in future tense, not in past tense. And it makes a huge difference.
I love that. And I was going to say, unless it's a factual dispute, like 2 + 2 = 6, case in which, like it was the case in, you know, the mistake you graciously helped me correct in one of my posts, you just tell the person, I think 2 + 2 = 4 now, not in the future.
Well, so what I didn't do was I didn't say, you messed up. What I said was, I think this is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
And so it wasn't about you. Okay, I promised a couple LinkedIn hints. Let me give you 2 LinkedIn hints, if that's okay. I follow a gentleman named Richard Bliss a lot, and he's a LinkedIn expert. He does a ton of research on what works on LinkedIn and what doesn't work on LinkedIn. And two of the things he recommends that I do as well as I possibly can. Number one, when you post something, don't post anything else for a period of time. So he usually recommends a day. And the reason for that is the moment you post the second thing, LinkedIn stops promoting the first thing.
Hmm.
So let the post ride so that more people can see it. You know that LinkedIn only shows your post to a small percentage of your followers.
Right.
And the more people respond to it, talk about it, the more followers you get exposed to. So post once and then sit for a day. Don't do anything else. And then you can post a second time.
Or post something else. I have a question about that. There may be other people in the audience have somewhat similar situation, right? So when you have multiple posting entities, you have your individual profile, you have a company page, potentially you have a newsletter. You know, I used to be in the, well, post from one of those and then share on the others and so forth. But I did notice, to your point about like the algorithm and so forth, that like sometimes one of those gets a lot of exposure. But if you repost it on two other, like one of the reposts gets next to zero exposure. Like it's as if LinkedIn says, oh, this is identical content. These people are, even though you may have posted it in a group or on your newsletter or something like that. And so anything you've learned about managing those multiple feeds and what
works? Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Maybe next time I talk to Richard, I'll ask him.
Well, please let me know because I'm still figuring out. And if anybody listens to this and knows the answer, please reach out to me.
The second hint I want to give everybody, and I just started doing this a few months ago, and it has made a tremendous difference, is I try really hard to make two comments on other people's content every single day. And LinkedIn cares about engagement. Right? They're not there to sell you ads as much as they're there to get you engaged with content. And so it isn't just posting content, it is engaging with other people's content.
Yeah.
And so if you are out there listening and you see me posting on your content, it's because you're one of the people I read. And every day I say to myself, is there something I could say about that? And and I do. I post something. I try to post two things every day. I'm sorry. I try to comment on two people's other posts every day. Now, there's a rule about posting, and it's something like 7 words. It only counts if it's at least 7 words long. So don't say awesome, great post, good idea. I mean, you could say that. It's fine. It just doesn't count in LinkedIn considering you a conversationalist. And so try to write a real sentence and a real thought and get a conversation going. That's what LinkedIn wants. And when we give it to them, they reward us. Each one of us has something called a social selling index. And the social selling index, it is an indicator of what percentage of your content they're going to share with how many people. And so the higher your social selling index is, the higher they will reward you with exposure with your content.
Wow. Well, I knew some things about the algorithms and so forth, but I'm sure, I assumed there was some sort of score for the person overall, because we live in a, every one of your customers has a score if you're a sophisticated company like LinkedIn, Microsoft, et cetera. But yeah, I think you made it more real for me. And I think on the 7 words long, I mean, I just think, there's people out there that like literally copy paste, like great post or, like have some administrative assistant do that or things like that. And, you're always going to have some way of trying to fake the algorithm, but LinkedIn probably tries to cut that off with the 7 words or, so thanks for sharing. That's great.
Yeah, no worries. And back to the thing we started with at the very beginning, when I'm posting, and I'm going to recommend every single person out there do this, please. When I'm posting, I try to figure out, is there something I can add to the conversation? Not demean the author, not disagree with the author per se, but if I do disagree, I'll ask it as a question. Hey, have you thought of it this way? Or I usually think of it this way. That seems like it's like your point this way. And so it's always a positive, how can I add to the conversation?
So you're saying I'm not going to get a comment from you that says, I wrote the book on this, period?
Probably not.
The majority of your content?
Probably not.
So. All right. One of my big worries for today is canceled, so thanks.
So I posted on one of yours recently, Robert.
Yeah, you did.
And I think I said something nice. Well, I always say something nice, so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm appreciative of the feedback, whether it's nice or hey, you got some things to learn, young man. Sort of young man. That's equally appreciated.
All right. Let's go ahead and wrap this up, Robert. Thank you so much for your time today. If anybody wants to contact you, how can they do that?
So we talked about LinkedIn. Obviously, I'm out there. Our website, ib.catalyst.com. And of course, if you've been following our LinkedIn activity, we launched our newsletter, the Pricing Power Clarity newsletter. And I hope to use that as a vehicle to be more consistent and grow the audience. So please look that up under the EBITDA Catalyst LinkedIn profile as well.
Yep. And you can subscribe to those on LinkedIn, which is really powerful. So I know I get yours. I am a subscriber to your newsletter on LinkedIn.
Goodness.
I know. Nice.
What's coming next?
So to our listeners, thank you so much for your time. If you enjoyed this, would you please leave us a rating and a review? You can get instructions on how to leave a rating or review because it's so freaking hard to figure out. Go to ratethispodcast.com/impactpricing and they'll help you figure out how to do it on your player. And then finally, I got a phenomenal recommendation from one of my clients recently. It's a little long, but I really would love to read it to you because it makes me feel happy. And that's from Fede de Balze. He wrote it on LinkedIn, so you can find it on my LinkedIn recommendations. Mark has been a fantastic partner to Pacific Lake and to the search fund entrepreneurs he's worked with. There are three things in particular that have made him impactful. First, he's a natural and talented educator. Pricing is a team sport that requires many stakeholders to be involved for success. Mark's top-notch abilities as an educator and communicator make it easier to get everyone on the same page. It also means he can host education boot camps for larger groups. These are very high ROI. Second, the depth of his experience in pricing means that he can quickly hone in on the important question to ask or topic to address. This means that Mark can have an impact in just a few conversations with a company. This makes him very valuable, and as we can connect Mark with companies that seem to have pricing opportunities, and he'll quickly help them identify the opportunity they have and come up with next steps. Finally, and by the way, this is my favorite one, Mark loves pricing, loves educating, and loves coaching companies. He's doing what he loves, and because of that, he does it with passion and energy. All I can say is thank you, Fede. That was amazing. I'm actually tingling up my spine reading it out loud. So finally, if you have any questions or comments about the podcast or pricing in general, feel free to email me, mark@impactpricing.com. Now, go make an impact.